guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Say that more slowly because I'm stupid.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The literal translation of the space station is Celestial Palace.
Celestial Palace.
Celestial Palace, Tangong.
I got a tweet saying it was Heavenly Palace.
Oh, okay.
Well, sort of same thing. Celestial, heavenly, right? Same idea.
Okay, so Heavenly Palace is what I saw as well, actually, to be honest. But Wiki says Celestial Palace. Either way, it's coming. And if you look at some estimates, I mean, here's the one from ABC News. You know what is right there at ground zero, square one, in the strike zone?
Massachusetts?
Boston, Massachusetts. There's a line going across the U.S. that is, you know, Boston across, like Milwaukee, Chicago.
So it could hit like Iowa.
Iowa, Nebraska, exactly. It looks like Utah, Northern California, Southern
But Boston's
Oregon.
In the bullseye.
Oh, Boston's in the bullseye, baby. You better believe it.
And so's Iowa.
And so's Iowa. That's right.
The eagle flies at dawn. The eagle flies at dawn.
So that's a big bullseye then.
Yeah, and that's a call out to the Wood to get our special pack. We'll meet you out in Western Connecticut. You know where to go, Wood. Grab the girls. I'll see you out there.
Yeah, drive west, and when you see the oak with the missing bark, make a left.
But this is what's absurd, is that we can't tell whether the thing's going to hit in Boston or Iowa. And it's right there. It's right. They can see the thing. And it's right there.
Like, so, again, is Connecticut in the zone?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we might be good then.
If this makes you feel better, I'm just reading from an article that was just sent to me. The probability of overcoming approximately 302 million to 1 mega million odds, because it's the mega millions is like the biggest it's ever been tonight, and winning the 521 million top prize this evening is far better than the chances you'll be struck by the debris from the Chinese space station set to hit Earth as soon as late Saturday morning or Saturday.
Yeah, so good luck. You're all set. No problem.
I got to buy a lottery ticket on the way home, then.
To your phones, as promised, everything on the board. Pete in Pittsfield on John Carlos Stanton. Were you as excited about that as Maz was yesterday?
Actually, what I wanted to talk to Maz about was that John Carlo wasn't the general manager that didn't want John Carlo to come here. John Carlo never wanted to come here. He made it very plain, and he
that's not true.
Remember,
that's not what
he actually killed the deal between San Francisco and St. Louis when he announced that he wasn't going to go to either city.
Yeah, but he didn't kill one to Boston.
Yes, he did.
No, he didn't, Pete. No, he didn't.
No, listen.
It was just the opposite. His agent said we would have listened
from the very beginning. And the three teams he picked, Boston was number one, Philadelphia, the third team. I can't really. I think it was the Mets, but I could be wrong.
You mean New York? You mean the Yankees were number one? Do you think the Red Sox went after him, Pete?
I think he called up, like they said, once he announced that he didn't want to go to St. Louis and San Francisco. I think that he did call up, and I think the story is that
I can't. You're taking too long.
No, he's wrong. He's wrong. Dave Dombrowski is on the record at the GM meetings or the winter meetings. I don't remember which one, as saying that they placed a call early in the process. The Marlins told them what the expectations were, and the Red Sox didn't want to do that. And I firmly maintain that the expectations were largely about the contract. Most everything that was said and written at that time said if you took on the whole contract, you could pretty much have him. The Red Sox weren't willing to do that. Had they done that, they might have been able to get him. The fact that they didn't show interest in him, aggressive interest in him, blows my mind. And so, look, I admit, believe me when I tell you, if the Red Sox and the Yankees are both good, it's better for us. You know, it's far more entertaining, all of that. Okay, I would have loved for the guy to be here. I'm not rooting for the Yankees, but selfishly, I took great joy in that yesterday.
No,
I did.
I couldn't tell. And you're not rooting for the Yankees, would you please?
I just admit, I will admit that yesterday was a selfish celebration. That was entirely about me.
Yes. You don't have to feel bad about that.
It was 100% about me. When he took that first swing, and I saw the ball jump off his bat like he hit a freaking Titleist one with a one iron, I said, oh my God, please go. Keep going. Just be high enough.
Steven Bilbrica on the Sox. Hi, Steve.
Mash your lion through your teeth. Face it. Anyways, how many starts are they going to waste of Chris Sales? It makes no sense they have to pull him that early. I understand they want to save him for the end of the year, but they're doing it the wrong way. 100% the wrong way.
No, they're not. They're doing it the right way.
Listen to me. It's like pulling Rask out for the third period of games. If he's going to go through his, the pregame warm-ups, he's got to throw 150 pitches anyway. 10 or 15 more pitches to start. ain't going to hurt a guy. You're better off skipping a shot every couple of weeks.
Hurt him last year. Hurt him last year.
And most of the years he's been in the majors.
Yes. I mean, to me, the pattern with this guy has been obvious. And the other thing is, you knew that was coming. I told you. I was surprised that Sale did as well as he did yesterday. I thought he'd be a little more off than he was. He pitched well. He walked three in six innings, which for him is a little high. But overall, bad lineup. He manhandled them. But once I saw the pitch count where it was, I said, they're not going to send him out for the seventh, and they shouldn't. Right move. It's the right move. If they had managed it better in the late innings and had a better arm in the back end of the bullpen, they'd have won that game easy. They should have won it anyway.
What was your grade for Alex Cora yesterday?
F. F. I mean, when you look at the
way... What was the biggest mistake?
To me, he stuck with Kelly too long. And then I think you can second guess Pointer not coming into the game to face the lefty with Carson Smith in there, not bringing Kimbrell into the game in the eighth inning. And that one I'll even allow for. But it just felt to me like Cora spent the spring telling us about all these things he was going to do. And then it got to game day, and he didn't really do any of them. F. F. F, 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 F for Alex Cora. So, F.
Dakota in Braintree. Go ahead, Dakota.
Before I get to the Patriots and that NFL rule, wait a minute. Isn't Sunday April 1st? Could this be one big April's Fool's joke?
If it's so, then the whole world is in on it, Dakota.
Yeah, maybe.
Because it's coming. It's coming.
Well, and the other thing, what did Jimmy say? It's like hitting the Mega Millions or whatever?
Yeah, you have a better chance of actually hitting Mega Millions.
Oh, but hold on. By this thing. They think, so wait, I'm going to trust those odds. The same people who tell me it could hit anywhere between Iowa and Boston within a 16-hour, I'm going to trust their odds. Something tells me the odds are a little bit higher than they're giving me.
And the other thing, too, is whoever creates this thing, they should have some type of tracking beam reactor. So if it goes up and it's coming down, it's coming back at you.
Exactly. Agreed.
How about just a remote where you can blow it up?
I know. All right, let me get to the Patriots real quick. On the rule, this new lowering the head rule, it's going to benefit the New England Patriots more than any other team because they're not taught to lead with their head. So this is great for the Patriots, for one. Now, on the Malcolm Butler, help me understand this correctly because I've been reading, listening to the interview. Is he, Malcolm Butler, saying that the coach wanted him to do a certain technique for the Super Bowl, but Malcolm Butler decided, no, that's not what I want to do, and I don't agree with that tactic?
I didn't hear that part of the interview. Did he say that?
I didn't pick that up either.
But that's the way it sounded. Listen to what was talked and what was read. It's almost like they wanted me to do one thing. I didn't want to do it. So, okay, you're not going to play if you're not going to go out there and do the game plan. That's the way it's said. And he's talking about staying in his own lane. He's like, he wanted to go out of the lane.
No.
I know the lane was about the chain of command and stuff. My point is, if you listen to it, it almost sounds like he wasn't going to do what the coaches wanted him to do in the game for whatever reason. And if that was the case, then this is all on Malcolm Butler and not on Bill Belichick, because I don't care what corporation.
So you are such
an
apologist, Dakota. It's so bad.
Who's apologizing?
It's so bad.
Who's apologizing, Michael? If your boss or your owner told you that you needed to do X, Y, Z when you go on the mic and you say, screw that,
yes,
I'm not going to do it.
Send me home.
Are you going to get ramifications?
Send me home.
And they were. They had one more game left. And then what? He's gone.
Dakota.
So they sent him home.
Send me home. If I'm not doing the job and I'm not fit for duty, send me home. In your scenario, I'm not fit for duty. I'm not doing what the management tells me, but they put me in that chair over there. But the mic's still on. I'm still on the show. That doesn't make any sense. If he's not doing the job, you don't trust him, send him home. Don't give him a uniform. He was fit to be in uniform. He was fit and cleared to play. He was fit to be on special teams. So you tell me.
No, I just find that part of it comical. Because the other thing is, if we're going to take that same thing, Malcolm Butler didn't want to play the defense.
Where did Malcolm say that today, by the way?
He didn't. He didn't. But, you know, you heard Bedard say, like, go back to the Instagram post he had about the game plan.
Also, look, I mean, he's sort of been on his own island all season, if you want to say that. He wasn't playing the defense all season. Fine. Fair enough. Then why do you put him in uniform? If you don't trust him, he's not playing the defense, send him home. Period. Period, story over. But you have him in uniform. He's cleared to play, and no one else can forget the system or what they're asking them to do. Nothing's happening out there. They're not stopping anyone. And now you're losing the game, and it's the second half. And you're going to keep him there?
Maybe he didn't want to play the defense. Did they ask Stephon Gilmore to play the defense, or did they just tell him to play man-to-man because he couldn't play the defense?
Dakota knows there's no excuse for it. He does. But he's trying. He's searching. I think a lot of fans are. It's a hard one, man. Bill was so good and made so many good calls. Made the wrong call for the wrong reason, and it's just hard to fathom that it happened.
Calgary Mass, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass.
I'm a sports dork now.
That guy is a hack.
Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You know, I'm going to be fair. I've been anti-Alex Cora the hire because I just think any first-year manager in here is asking too much. So it's not just Alex Cora. It's any rookie manager. I would not want to have this job. So I was against the hire for that express reason. And every time Cora said in the offseason, well, I can handle it. I've managed in the World Baseball Classic, and I can handle it. I've managed winter ball. It's like you just want to say to the guy, you can't be serious. And I think Alex Cora realized in these last 24 hours, this ain't the World Baseball Classic.
I mean, he's going to have to make judgments, you know, that he's never had to make before. And this one, you know, you could say, well, there was, it's not like he had three games before and had limited guys in the pitching staff. And he's weighing a long-term thing here that he's never had to deal with before. And so I just think there were a couple of opportunities there yesterday to get Kelly out of that game and get either Pointer, Kimbrell, whoever into the game, and the choices he made felt like they were all wrong.
And then, you know, some of the, you know, so I mean, this didn't happen at the World Baseball Classic or at Winter Ball, Alex, where after one of 162, the lead columnist in town writes the next day, bring back John Farrell. Dan Shaughnessy in the Globe, bring back Grady Little, he says, bring back Bobby Valentine. He writes that the Rays look like they're trying to lose this year, but that didn't stop them from overwhelming the Sox set up by committee in the 6-run eighth. And in case you haven't heard, all this damage was inflicted while Craig Kimbrell sat in the bullpen and never even warmed up. This was after we were told all winter that he would be used in high-leverage situations before the ninth inning. Oh, right, Shaughnessy. Did I mention that the Sox ran into a pair of outs? Didn't think so. And it would have been three if Tampa Bay didn't blow the relay throw that bounced off the mound on Eduardo Nunez's second inning inside the park homer. He says, first question, why no Kimbrell? And then he gives Cora's answer that you just pretty much heard there. And Shaughnessy writes, sorry, this won't fly with the folks back home. Kimbrell's spring was limited because he was in Boston for 3 weeks caring for his infant daughter, but Cora does himself no favors by telling us that Kimbrell is ready, but the Sox don't want to put him into an inning that is not clean. Kimbrell shouldn't be here if he's not available to rescue Joe Kelly once Kelly gets into trouble in the eighth. And you don't like the thing about, well, in 15 days, this would be different, too. You don't like that line.
No, I mean, what does that mean? It's too early now, but, you know, 2 weeks from now, it's probably going to be right. What? Like, so April 15th is the line? That's where the line is? I just, now, look, you know, I understand what he's saying about the long term. I get it. And then at the same time, later in that same column, Shaughnessy talks about Bobby Pointer.
Here, can I get to it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Same with kid lefty Bobby Pointer, writes Shaughnessy, who warmed up but did not get in the game. There were a couple of spots for a lefty in the eighth, but Pointer has never pitched in the big leagues, and Cora again said, quote, we're not going to put him in a spot like that. Excuse me, right, Shaughnessy? Then why is Pointer here? Why is Cora saddled with a couple of relievers, one a rookie and one an all-star, who could not be put into a quote-unquote spot like that? This makes it sound like the Sox started the season with a dysfunctional roster. Maybe this loss is on Dave Dombrowski, he writes. This is game one of 162, Alex. Are you noticing this is not the World Baseball Classic?
I mean, it really, look, I get it. It's opening day. You're managing for the long haul. But if you can't use Pointer against a left-handed batter, then why is he on the roster? Why is he warming up on top of that? Like, what's the logic? You're waiting for a blowout game to get him in there? None of it makes any sense. It almost felt like he was still managing like a spring training game.
And then Shaughnessy writes this. Kelly, here's his line. One out recorded, three walks, one hit, four earned runs, ERA, 108. Cora on Kelly, quote, he had good stuff.
Who does that sound like?
Cora on Kelly, quote, he had good stuff, he had to keep it in the zone, end quote. Ouch, writes Shaughnessy, Farrell-esque. One game. Bring back John Farrell. Yeah. Bring back Bobby Valentine.
So, as he keeps saying, one game, and I don't want to freak out too much, but it really did feel a lot like the last couple of seasons.
Oh, no, it really did. Yeah, when you weigh it all
idiocy
out.
On the base paths. And then...
They only scored 4 runs, Murray.
Oh, I know. Yeah, no. So, lack of pop in the lineup.
Very confident and strong.
Yeah, there he is again. And so, with Alex Cora, and I know, look, you know, these guys don't want to throw any of their players under the bus, but...
The guy that was fresh and powerful.
Is it just so hard... Is it so hard? It would be so refreshing for Alex Cora. I would believe in him a little bit more in this team if he just said, hey, I screwed it up. Trying to work out the kinks, my first game as a manager in Major League Baseball. Instead, it's more of this, he just sounds like an excuse-making boob, just like Farrell has for the last few years.
In terms of shape to his secondary pitches?
Right, John.
They still
had good stuff. Joe Kelly is a gutless mental patient on the
mound. I'm sorry, repeat that?
I said he was a gutless mental patient, John. I was not surprised at all that he had that meltdown, especially after he got kind of squeezed on a... You could see it coming, sweating like Calvin Chiraldi up there. Oh,
yes.
He sucks, John. The worst. I'm sorry, it's going to take me a while, and I know I got to sit with you on the baseball.
But thanks for the heads up.
I'm giving you a heads up now, Maz.
Pleasure.
It's going to take until like maybe mid-May, unless this first Yankee series has some pop to it. Because it feels just the same to me.
I understand the point you're making.
Yeah, because, John, I have a hard time with this team right now.
Oh, no, listen, the Yankee series will have some pop to it, Mario.
No.
Oh, well, right, yeah. Moonshots. Oh, where's that one going, Giancarlo? Oh, that's off to Jupiter. That one landed in Worcester.
That one hit the Chinese space station. Yeah. Is what it did.
Put good swings on a ball.
My guess is the pop is going to come from the number 3 spot in the New York lineup is where the pop's going to come from.
Just more of the same is all that was.
Chris Young needs the at-bats.
Day one. Bring back Grady Little. Oh, it's so awesome. Dante and Linfield. Go, Dante.
Hey, guys. First things first. Not bringing in Kimbrel. Unexcusable. But it's not so much the decision that they didn't bring in Pointer the lefty. It's the fact that anyone else besides Carson Smith should be facing a lefty. A sidewinder stands all the way on the right side of the rubber to make it terribly hard for righties. Makes it seem like, a lefty sees the ball 3 feet longer against Carson Smith. It doesn't matter that Pointer didn't come in. Anyone else needs to be in that spot just because of the way Carson Smith throws. This is an absolute joke.
Right.
And I honestly don't think you're digging him that hard enough for making a mistake like that.
So it's one game. I'm trying to be fair, is what it's trying to be. The second guess in Carson Smith is you could have brought him in one batter earlier against a righty. So Carson Smith's first three batters would have been a righty, a lefty, a righty. So he'd have been facing two righties. What Cora did by waiting a batter was Carson Smith's first batter was a lefty and his third batter was a lefty. So he had to face 2 out of 3 lefties versus 2 out of 3 righties because Cora stuck with Kelly one at bat too long. Jimmy Stewart also had
Quickly, I think on the two lefties was the walk and the triple.
Yeah, it was. Oh yeah,
they both got on base,
and he made the righty look bad. He struck him out.
He did strike him out.
Jimmy Stewart had a second guess on the alignment in the outfield on the spawn up out there, Jimmy.
I think Mookie Betts might have had the wrong outfield situational defensive shift card.
So I'll tell you what, I wonder about this too. I'm glad Jimmy brought this up.
It should have been a doubles defense on the line?
It should have been a doubles defense on the line instead of having Denard Span played more towards right center field. Because if you look at when the ball is hit, Mookie's got to go a long distance, and I would argue that
I'm not going to get this one, fellas. Sorry.
I would argue as great a defensive outfielder that Mookie Betts is, he should have caught that ball that Denard Span hit. He should have. He absolutely should have. Tough play, but a play he should make.
See, now, I don't think the ball was catchable either way, Jimmy, but I don't think your point's wrong.
Thank you.
In that.
Well, there's 2 outs, so do you play a doubles defense with 2 outs?
No, but they were shifted, and I'll tell you why I don't like it there. Okay, and again, I don't know all of, Span spray charts and everything else, but I'll tell you why I don't like it. Because I feel like Smith is going to come in on a lefty with his slider, which he loves. And Span, more likely than not, if he hits it, is going to hook it.
It's a horrible pitch.
He's going to hook it.
He bats almost 400 pulling balls, Denard Span.
Yeah, so again, maybe that's because teams defend him the other way because that's where he hits the ball. Like, I don't know Span's spray chart. I can't tell you that. But I think in the matchup with Smith, it doesn't feel right to have the right field corner wide open.
We continue with your calls and thoughts on Agenda Free Friday right after Murray's update.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
For where we at right now, physically, and it's not, it doesn't make, for what we're trying to shoot, what we're trying to accomplish here, we need him for the long run and not for just be 1-0 in an opening day. So, you know, if that situation presents probably later, you know, and we're talking about probably 15 days or something like that, or before when he's really ready, he'll be in that situation.
Again, well, 15 days part of it just I find mystifying. So he needs 2 more weeks of spring? Is that the deal? Like, you know, so it's okay to do it on April 15th because you need him for the long haul, but it's not okay to do it on basically April 1st? Like, I don't get it. I don't get it. And I just feel like the whole thing started to unravel and he didn't know quite what to do. And this is part and parcel to having a rookie manager. So now, all of a sudden, like, had the game just finished out the way it had, I thought, okay, fine. But what if it turns out that they're one of these teams that has all these crazy late-inning situations because their eighth inning's a big hole now. Now they get a rookie manager on top of it. Like, it just creates another layer of concern.
Okay, the Rob Gronkowski trade rumors continue out there. Greg Bedard, Boston Sports Journal, had some information yesterday on that, and it continues. It was picked up by Pro Football Talk today, that stuff. And I know Pro Football Talk is close with the Gronkowski camp, so this still remains out there. Max in the truck, you have a thought?
Hey, what's up, guys? Felger, give me like 30 seconds. If the Patriots trade Rob Gronkowski, I'm going to be so pissed. Bill Belichick, I think, has lost his mind. And Rob Kraft has got to open up his paycheck. The guy's the best tight end. If they trade Gronkowski, Brady's going to retire. That's why I think they're looking at Manziel.
Okay.
Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Okay, babe. If they're looking at Manziel as the next Brady, like, no, okay, please, would you stop with that? I don't think there's any way Robert would allow them to trade Rob Gronkowski. I just don't.
So that's going over Bill's head.
Yep.
Again.
Yep.
For another football decision.
Correct.
The second in a year.
Yep.
How do you think Bill reacts to that?
Same way he did the first. He'll drop a dime to a magazine and he'll be pissed and maybe he'll act vindictively or, you know, I don't know. How could he be a bigger curmudgeon than he already is?
Well, when he acted so irrational to trade the asset that needed to be moved for a second round draft pick, you think he would act rational this time around when the owner goes over his head again to make another football decision? This is why I think, call me crazy, that if Tom were to rework his deal to get Gronk back in the fold, okay, this money that's now available, allocate that to Rob Gronkowski. Sure thing. Whatever you want, Tom. You're now in charge. Bill looks at this and says, oh, you go over my head again with another football decision? Bye. I'm out. I'm done. You brought McDaniels back anyway, and he's your new head coach in 2018.
So maybe this is Belichick's way to get back at Brady. Like, and I'm playing off of Murray here, obviously. But like, okay, Tom, you don't want to redo your contract? Well, then we can't pay Gronk. So you tell me. Combined, you two guys are going to get about 30 to 32 million. You tell me how you want to allocate it. If you want to take 22, Gronk's gone.
Here's Travis. Maybe, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry, Jimmy. What do you got?
Maybe Bill can't leave.
Because?
Maybe Kraft has threatened to let everybody know where the bodies are buried.
Now we're getting sinister.
Well, what do you mean by that, Jim?
Yeah, like, for example.
So, like, say Bill wanted to quit yesterday, right? And I'm not saying he did. I'm not. This is just me playing out a theory.
Spitballing him.
Say Bill wanted to quit yesterday. Kraft goes, no, I'm going to tell the world where all the bodies are buried, how Spygate happened. I'm going to go through the film tapes, show us how else we cheated, all this other stuff, and you'll be nothing.
The Mona Lisa Vito press conference, exactly. The air and the footballs.
Yeah, but that hurts Robert as well. I don't believe that.
He could do it in a way that doesn't.
The fact that it's coming from you, Jimmy, it gives me pause for concern, but I don't buy it. Here's Travis in Portsmouth on the Celtics on an Agenda Free Friday. Hi, Travis.
Excellent.
Yeah, Felger, you got to help me out here with some of the comments you were making about Philadelphia, the trade with the Sixers in conjunction with the Nets pick versus the Lakers pick. Your logic seems a little circular to me, so I need you to help me here.
Sure.
So part of what you were saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, is with the taking Jason Tatum number one versus Lonzo Ball number two versus Markel Fultz, there's a second guess potentially there depending upon which player they could have taken, so we need to let that play out a little bit. That was one of them, correct?
Yeah, well, fair enough, sure.
Which is fair. I don't know anyone who would say that we don't need to see let that play out before there's a possible criticism.
Exactly.
But what I would... Go ahead.
No, that's right. Exactly right. And let's just give you another one. If Kyrie Irving can never get healthy, if he's constantly bothered by the knee, you're not going to look at that trade different?
I would look at it different. But, I mean, the one thing I would say, first of all, is Danny has publicly said he would have taken Jason Tatum number one overall. So, in my opinion, the second guess is not about the trade. The second guess is about who he would have drafted.
Right, I agree.
He made the trade for additional draft pick currency. So, I mean, you can second guess him on who he drafted, but not making a trade for another pick.
Agree, yeah, Travis, I agree 100%. And I think when I talked about this the other day, I said the fact that he got an extra chip for taking the player that he wanted anyway, you can close the book on that. I mean, absolutely. That was good asset management, for sure.
Okay, well, I mean, an extension to that. So, Tony, and again, Tony, I don't want to put words in your mouth. So you correct me if I'm wrong here. What you then said is it was a mistake, however, taking the Lakers pick versus the Nets pick. Because the Lakers pick, very likely, right, is going to be a lower pick than the Nets pick, right? That's basically what you were saying?
At the moment, yes. So what's your recount? So what's your rejoin to that?
Well, I mean, to that I would say two different transactions. First of all, they got Kyrie Irving for the Nets pick, which is different from that. And the Lakers pick, you can't close the book on that. If we're playing your game, Felger, and we need to wait and see how this plays out, then that pick will translate over to next year, which could be as high as number two overall. And as
you're
much
right.
as you want to say...
Right, so let me stop. I'm giving you 2.5 minutes. You're right. We have to let that all play out. If you end up getting the Sacramento pick that turns out to be a better player, then Brooklyn's going to get... I'm sorry, the Cavs are going to get with that Brooklyn pick, then you will have won that facet of the trade.
Sure. I'm just telling you, my greater point on that was that this is the draft you wanted to be in the top five.
That's the way it looks right now. Just the way it looks right now that Tatum's a better player than Fultz and Ball. But we have to let that all play out. That's exactly my point, Travis. That's exactly my point, and that's totally fair. Let's see who the Cavs end up with the Brooklyn pick, and let's see who you end up with, ultimately, with the Sacramento pick or whatever pick that ends up being.
Sure. I'm just telling you, this is a big man draft, and I wanted to be in the top five in this draft.
Who knows? Maybe the next year's draft is another big man draft.
Okay, that's fair.
And you draft Hakeem Olajuwon. This is the whole point of the exercise. When you trade draft picks and you trade futures and you trade young players, and Kyrie's still a young player, and you do all these things, you need to see what they all become before you go back to the trade and say you feel good about it or not. I'd still do it again. I'll be wrong along with all the green teamers because I would have done everything Danny did in hindsight, right? Tatum over those other two guys, any day of the week. The extra draft pick, any day of the week. Kyrie Irving over Isaiah and Jay Crowder in that group, any day of the week. The Brooklyn LA thing, I don't know. I don't know if he had a choice. Maybe Cleveland was just smart enough to say, no, we want Brooklyn versus LA. But Danny was given a lot of credit, and you know, you heard it early on in the year. Oh, yeah, he got the Cavs to take that Brooklyn pick when the Lakers pick's going to be worse, or, you know, better. The Lakers pick is going to come in with more ping pong balls. Danny got him on that one too, and he didn't. And Kyrie didn't make it through his first year. So I'm just saying, if Kyrie doesn't stay healthy, if Ball or Fultz end up to be a better player, if the Cavs get Bagley or a transcendent big guy out of this draft, if any of those things happen, you're going to look at this trade differently. That's all. It's a very simple take.
I would love to know whether the Celtics tried to get the Cavs to take the Laker pick and the Cavs said no. Or they just, maybe that's what they offered first.
I'm curious about that too.
Like, I would love to find that out. And because it just feels to me like this draft is the better draft to be in. So I wanted a big guy. I like big guys. I'd rather be at the top of this draft.
What did the Bruins show you last night? The Boston Bruins, the first place Boston Bruins. They show you something last night? We discuss it right after this.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Mass.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
Steal, Schaller over the line, far side, centers, Wingles, shoots, blocked, they score! Pastrnak threats it in front, they score! Pastrnak, a perfect deflection to Bergeron, he's able to angle it just inside the near post, a power play goal!
Center point to Hedman, right circle Kutrov, centers it, score! JT Miller!
Right in the net, Paquette shoots, stick save made by Rask. And then he got a couple of bodies crashing in, and Rask just took a swing at Konecker, and he's going at it. Look out! It's a free-for-all left of the net as Rask was firing blockers and gloves.
Here comes Vasilevsky down. The referee just intercepted him. He was on his way to Rask.
The puck skittered wide behind the play. It's Pastrnak going to throw him with Girardi.
Well, it was Girardi that took down Bergeron. At least that's what Pastrnak saw.
And both guys threw a couple of haymakers. Neither connected.
Pastrnak saw Rask throwing some punches. He decided it was his turn.
Saved by Rask on Kucherov.
up, and that was pure instinct. Rask just lunging to his left.
I assumed it was we were looking at a 2-2 game. He got it with his left pad, I think.
Marchand steps up. Krug's back. Andrew Bergeron. He scores! What a sequence! Rask, the impossible save at one end. Perfect triangular passing at the other. And the Bruins are 8 minutes and 1 second away from first place.
Pastrnak on the line right side. Centers Bergeron out in front. Marchand shoots. He scores! Extra 40 Howe for David Pastrnak. And more importantly, Brad Marchand stuffs in a backhander. Make it 4-2 Bruins. And the horn will sound. The tempers are still flaring. But when you look at the standings tomorrow, the team at the top of the Eastern Conference, the top of the Atlantic Division, will read Boston Bruins.
So Jimmy Stewart putting that together. What stood out most to you last night, Mess?
Oh, me, Rask. That Rask thing. Like, you know, the relentlessness of the team has been there all year long. But how often do you see Rask lose his mind like that? Like, that was it. I think I said that to you in the email exchange this morning. Like, when you see that, they've all bought in. They've all bought in. This is what you dream of if you're a fan of a team. That every guy on the team has bought in and believes in it. And they believe, and Rask believes. He lost his mind. I mean, like, to see him that invested in it, because they answered the bell last night. That was a playoff game. That felt like a playoff game. I mean, I don't know how you don't get geeked up about it with that.
I mean, he's wanting to start brawls like he's Ron Hextall back in the day. It was awesome. And it just shows the chemistry of the team. Maz is right. And it's another one of these games that shows, like, that it factor, whatever that is, the character, the chemistry, the balls of this team against a team that's going to be potentially in your way in the playoffs. And I feel like that they're very talented on paper. They're a better team on paper, the Lightning.
The Lightning, yeah.
But in these last couple of games, going back to this last one on last night and then the one a few weeks back on St. Patrick's Day, like, there's an edge there. The Bruins, I think, are in their head, or they're just out-toughing them, or they bullied them a little bit in the third period of the game on St. Patrick's Day. And for most of last night, like, I don't know how you can't look at this team and be geek for the playoffs, because it looks like they're poised for a deep run.
I mean, and McDonough was right in front of the net for the first two goals.
I think he was involved in all three.
I mean, it was like, I told you that, you know, if you're asking me a game moment, when they called Tampa for that penalty against Rask with 30 seconds to go in the first period, the Bruins end up getting a power play in, I think, 30 seconds. And Brickley said something at the time like, well, they have a chance for, you know, you don't have time for two or three good chances here. And I'm thinking, okay, that's if, like, everything goes right. They get down there. Bergeron gets waved out of the faceoff circle. Marchand ends up taking the draw. And then they score. And I said, my God, how do you just not love this team?
And the other thing I like, too, sorry to cut you off, is as geeked as we are and fans are for them right now, did you hear Cassidy after the game, some of his quotes? It was mostly, like, keep it in your pants. Like, we could be out of first with a loss on Saturday to Florida. Like, everybody calm down. And I love that. So he's definitely keeping the guys in check, too.
He does. He's got them all dialed in. They're all dialed in.
They've had a couple statement nights, and that was one of them. All right, back to the phones. Dan and Quincy, thanks for hanging on. Danny, what do you got for us today?
Okay, Felga, you there?
I am there, Danny. Thanks for hanging on.
Now, you know, shouldn't be ashamed, by the way, of paying attention to the sky. I mean, we live in an iron rock floating through outer space.
Attaboy.
I spent $3,000 on a telescope 25 years ago. 8-inch. I have an 8-inch aperture Schmidt-Cassegrain friggin' beautiful telescope.
Does it still work? Can you go see? Can you see the celestial
amazing.
Palace?
You set the motor and it goes the speed of the Earth's rotation, so you don't lose anything in the sky. It's unbelievable.
Awesome.
And I bought one to travel. I used to spend 10 weeks out of the year in Jamaica. I used to bring it to Jamaica. I let all the Jamaicans look at it. Really unbelievable, unbelievable space. And people laugh at you and me because we're floating in space.
Yes, because we have a respect for the delicate balance of where we are in this universe.
You do. Yes, yeah. We do.
You know, last week I heard you say, after the Tennessee press conference with Malcolm Butler, you said somebody, quote, must have got to him. I mean, what do you think Belichick is? Is he Don Belichick? Is he bringing his brother over from Sicily? And
yes.
Then he's telling his girlfriend it was between the brothers?
I think it's Ernie Adams, but yeah.
Oh, Tony. You there?
Yeah, I'm here. I told you. I think it's Ernie Adams. No. Ernie knows people.
No, but Danny, they have agreements with players that you don't throw mud at us. We won't throw mud at you on the way out the door, because no one ever does.
If any of the reasons that you guys gave for Belichick not playing Butler in the game, Do you think Kraft knows the reason?
Yes.
Okay. If it were any of those reasons that you guys suggested, do you think those are fireable offenses?
No.
You don't?
Well, no, not for him. If it's some bozo coach, yes, but not for him. Bill's allowed a bad day.
I think Kraft, if it's as egregious as you think it is, I said I didn't know. I was giving you an honest answer. I think I'm more honest than anybody. I don't know. But, I mean, it's okay that Kraft is the only guy he answers to. All right? He knows. He's okay with it.
I don't think there is a fireball offense right now for Bill. I mean,
I disagree with you.
How do you fire that guy?
Well, I don't know. The way people have been talking lately, it's like the guy doesn't know what he's doing. Let me ask you this.
It's just a strong distaste for how he managed that game. I think that's healthy.
Let me ask you this. If he had benched him for the first series,
yep,
he never would have lived that down because people are still talking about Welker getting benched. Okay?
Yeah.
If he didn't dress him and sent him home and didn't even show up for the Super Bowl, you guys wouldn't have been talking about that as well?
No, it'd be different.
Worse.
What we would be saying is what they saw they didn't like and they made a call and it didn't work, but at least they were consistent. It makes no sense.
If he benched him for the first series and then Butler had a bad game, then everybody would be blaming Belichick and saying he messed up his psyche. I don't think it was vindictiveness or a contract. Like, Tony, you said it was a contractual thing. I mean, Kraft seems to be okay. And the other thing, too, is every personnel move now, does it have to go through Brady?
It has to
go through Brady.
Not all of them, but some, I bet.
I mean, do you think that's right? Do you think it's right to undermine the coach right now?
No, of course not. Of course not. But that's the bet they made.
Who made it?
Kraft.
But, I mean, I know that, but the coach is supposed to run the team. He's the GM and he's the coach.
I know.
Everything goes through him. I mean, he does a better job. I asked you last week, why don't the Packers get back there every year? Why doesn't Seattle get back there every year with Russell Wilson? Why doesn't New Orleans get back there with Breeze every year?
Danny.
They all have good foundation quarterbacks, right?
But they don't have Belichick. And Kraft stuck his nose in there, and it's created problems. And it's going to hasten the end of this thing. It's not going to happen now, but it's going to happen sooner than it would have. And it's sort of created a slippery slope. If you're going to step in and keep Brady, then don't you have to step in and keep Gronkowski? And then where does it end? And yeah, it's created all sorts of problems. It's not good. Not good, but that's what happened.
Yeah, it's just the ripple effects of that decision are just so huge. Because it's not just Brady or Garoppolo. It's long-term versus short. Present versus future. Like, you know, you're affecting things 5 years down the road with that decision. So, like, to me, if you're Belichick and that's the one, if the owner steps in on a third receiver or, a slot corner, fine. Okay, you bite the bullet, we'll find a way around it. How do you find a way around the next quarterback? Like, there's just no way out of that one.
And on the game, Danny, if he had Wes Welkered him, sat him out the first quarter and then played him, we'd question it, but it wouldn't be as bad. What made Wes Welker so bad is that it was over stupid foot jokes at the press conference. It wasn't missed meetings or, you know, some of the things Butler's accused of doing, like out to lunch, not playing the defense, you know, a selfish play, looking in the backfield, like those things. Wes Welker made a comment at a press conference, and Bill sat him for the first quarter of a playoff game. You don't think that's a legit second guess? You don't think Bill deserves to be questioned on that? And so if they had done that to Malcolm Butler, I don't think it would have been as bad because we would have said, well, there's football reasons there. We don't know what they are, but Bill had his reasons. Okay, fine. And then it wasn't working out. They put him out there and they tried to, you know, make an adjustment and win the game, but he never did that.
No, and you know, the more you think about it too, and I know it was only one play, but Butler did play on special teams, right? This idea that it was disciplinary, but then why did he put him on the field on special teams?
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.